And before we start, we are celebrating a milestone today.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
We need to get you a mic, Daryl.
I have a mic.
Just for this special occasion.
Are we on already?
Oh, we on?
Yeah.
What's a mile?
Daryl Golden, everybody.
The producer. 400 episode.
This is number 400.
We have Deal Wall. Oh,
hey, don't get ahead of yourself here. Don't get ahead of yourself.
This is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Yolitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
How are we to 400?
Welcome to the 400th episode of Yolitics, guys.
Wow.
It's hard to believe. We've been doing this, what, 5 years?
Seven.
No,
we started in 2019. This is year seven.
November. We started November, so six and 2 months.
This is year seven.
This is year seven. 400 episodes.
Wow. Man, if we were a show, we would have gone into syndication by now and reruns, and we would be getting residual checks.
But instead, I'm still here stuck with you.
But we're not a TV show. We're still just making these.
400, huh?
Yeah, and we have job security because of that.
We have job security because of it?
I don't know. Yeah. Is there such a thing as job security anymore?
Today's episode is a great episode because we intercepted a reporter on her way back to the television newsroom. An exclusive. We have with us again Dia Wall,
with
the
another
senior
exclusive.
Of all
she
senior
keeps doing this.
Reporters.
Congratulations on 400.
At Thank WFAA. You. Thank you for coming back on. You know what I like? You know what's fun about you besides your personality? You always get some bubbly for our podcast.
You do.
And
not beer. This is Prosecco.
Listen, it's the only time I can drink and be at work.
It's not the only time, but
it's the only time when you can get away with
it. It's the only time you can get away with it.
Is the clarification.
So listen, we are less than 3 weeks away from the parents being able to register their children school vouchers in the state. But over the last, month? Mm-hmm. Month and a half? The state's been trying to assemble a group of private schools that are interested in participating, that will open up their wait lists and admissions departments to these public school students who want to sign up over there. So the guy in charge of it all is the acting comptroller in the state, Kelly Hancock, former state senator from Tarrant County. He agreed to an interview with you.
Yes, an exclusive, so really appreciate that. For those who don't know, I cover education. Mm-hmm. That is kind of my specialty at WFAA on the reporting side. And naturally, this is the biggest ESA or voucher program in the
education
country.
Education savings account.
Yep.
I don't want to be the Wheeler of the podcast here.
But education savings account. Yeah. But a lot of people call them vouchers because that's what it is. Sure. You take the money, you go to a private school with public funds. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of questions about how this is going to work, the mechanics of it all. And this is the first time private schools in the state have been able to enroll. The first question I had,
How many?
We're about 3 weeks out.
Sure.
How's it going?
And how is it going?
You know, I got to throw a little tease in. Daryl can't be the only one. Essentially, when I checked in about a week before our interview, less than 400 K-12 schools had been enrolled.
What?
390 K-12 schools for the entire state of Texas. In just a week's time, and this has to be a hat tip, right, to the acting comptroller's office, they just crossed the 1,000 campus mark. But here's the thing. Over half are pre-K campuses.
Okay.
So right now, as of the taping of your 400th episode of Yolitics, about 500 K-12 schools in the state of Texas have applied and are officially enrolled in the state's education savings account or voucher program.
And there are about 2,000 private
schools
across the state, accredited private schools across the state. So this is about a quarter of them are on board with this. I thought the number would be a lot more than that based on what lawmakers would have us believe, that people would be tearing down the doors to get into this thing here.
Yeah, I kind of thought the same thing, but then and we've talked about this before, is there enough incentive for these private schools?
Yeah.
Because these vouchers, you know, call them what you will, these vouchers are, you know, $10,000 a student, unless, you know, you've got some special situations. And would they be willing to accept just that? Would that be enough to, you know, for a parent to be able to pay the full tuition? And at least right now, anyway, it looks like a lot of these schools might be sitting on the sidelines, and maybe some of them are just waiting to see how year one goes.
Acting comptroller said to me directly, be patient. This is the first year. Sure. Obviously, they got a late start. They had to wait for the legislative session to end to go ahead and kick this thing off. So for them, they're saying, just be patient. I know one of the questions that I asked directly was, well, what's your message for parents who, this is all we've talked about when it comes to education in Texas for the last 5 years. And they get on there, the private school of their choice isn't on there.
Yeah.
There's not really a school of interest for them that's on there. He says, be patient. They're working feverishly and enrolling. And what I can tell you, based on my own reporting, looking at the data, in just the last week, they've upped the number they had by 25%. So they're working on processing. They're making their way through the list, and we'll see how it shakes out.
Did he talk about incentivizing private schools, the legislature having to incentivize them to get more of these schools on board? I think especially across the state, about the exclusive schools, that's where a lot of people want to go. Parish schools will, you know, nothing against them, but it's easier to get into those schools than it is these exclusive schools, Ursuline, St. Mark's, that already have the long waiting list of people across the state. Mm-hmm. Is he going to incentivize, or does he want the legislature to incentivize them?
So Mr. Hancock believes that the money is the incentive, right? In his mind, I asked directly the very same question about these exclusive private schools that do have higher tuition. We're talking $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year per child. His response was he believes that the state is seeing slower enrollment from those campuses because they do have extensive waiting lists. They're not hurting for students and families already ready to write the check with or without a voucher.
Right.
So in his mind,
and that check's bigger maybe than what that voucher is going to be, for sure. Yeah.
Much bigger.
Yeah.
Multiple times over.
Yeah.
They're betting that once the program opens up and in their hopes expands, the St. Mark's across the street is going to take it because the Cistercian in Irving is going to take it. Mm. And then his direct quote, which I want to go back to, was, well, when those wait lists start going away, then people will make different decisions. And to be honest with you guys, that's a question we're going to have to ask parents, right? If you have your heart set on St. Mark's, you've already gone through the list of this is the best location,
sure,
the best staff, the best offerings, the best college prep, whatever the rubric on how you make a decision as a family is. So that's a question that we're going to have to ask in further reporting to families, right? If you can't get into school choice A, are you going to take choice B if they take the voucher? That's something we're going to have to see bear out.
Yeah, and the curiosity for me is geographics here, because let's say, I mean, they gave you these numbers. They said that they had, you know, just over 1,000 schools that have signed up so far, and they added on this note that 262 of that 1,000, so more than a quarter of those, are in the DFW area. So you're going to have places around this state where there might be a desert, if you will, when it comes to one of these schools that will take these vouchers. Even if you as a parent want to send your kid to one of these schools and you are willing to do some driving, there may not be one that's close enough to you.
Wheels? Oh. For those viewers who don't know, I call Jason Wheeler Wheels occasionally.
I call him other things. But,
hey, watch yourself. This is a family program.
Please do.
This was a critique of this program from the very beginning, that there were going to be holes or gaps for people who live in further out communities. Yeah. You're not going to have as many rural counties in North Texas or anywhere else in the state that are going to have the robust number of private schools. I did ask who had the highest enrollment. He said Houston, which he said they're the biggest or most populated. I said, hold up now. Dallas is more populated than Houston as a metro
area. As an area, yeah.
So let's make sure.
Represent the 214-817.
Let's make sure we get it right. Okay. Houston is number one right now in schools enrolled. Dallas, number two. He said it's generally following the population. But again, to answer your question, this was a critique and a concern about rolling out this program beforehand, that the people who already live in big, heavily populated metros are going to have a lot more options and choice than some of the folks who live in the further out counties.
We may see those voucher deserts.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're going to play the entire interview with the acting comptroller here in just a moment, but a little bit more setup here too. Of course, the big headline right now that everyone's talking about, I think the Houston Chronicle reported, that non-Christian schools are being excluded. That might be one of the reasons the number is so low. What did he say about that?
I asked him directly. Well, let's start by, he got on the tracks to that question before I even did. He mentioned that they're having to go through, they do have challenges looking at one particular accrediting agency because there are concerns about potential ties to the Chinese government or other schools that may have ties to Islamic organizations. He says that could be in direct conflict with state law and some of the directives issued by Governor Greg Abbott. But in our interview today, just moments ago, fresh off the little interview
it's
we had.
It's still warm, yeah, it's
I
still
know,
hot.
He did
you
mention.
You asked him directly, though.
I did. He said no. Unequivocally, Christian schools are not the only schools being approved and accepted into this program. Non-Christian schools are not being blocked. His answer, the direct quote, absolutely not. With some of those schools that the Houston Chronicle reported on, they were actually accredited with more than one agency. So he said his guidance was to go ahead and apply again through the other accrediting agency, not the one that the comptroller's office is looking at right now, because it may have a conflict.
What happens, though, let's say if, you know, Wheeler School or Wheeler Academy here, you
do
know.
Do not let Jason educate your children.
Yeah, please do not. That's true.
For $9,999.
But let's say, exactly. We'll get some state contracts.
Yep.
But let's say that you know, Wheeler School has a bunch of different associations, like a lot of these schools do, and they have one with a Chinese, you know, government agency, or they have one with CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations. Is that going to keep them out of this program?
He says no, provided they meet all of the other standards, because he said, as a function of how this educational savings account voucher program is running, they cannot legally do that, nor do they intend to. The acting comptroller kept referring to how quickly they've had to roll this out, right? They're hurried, but they're not rushed, is what he told me. So I think a lot of the functions of getting folks approved and all of that, they're really flying the plane and building it at the same time. So I will say, he said more than 50 of those schools accredited by that agency that, again, was flagged and that they are now talking to the Attorney General about whether or not they can legally approve. More than 50 of those schools have been approved now through the alternative the agency. Accrediting agency.
Sure.
But as far as a decision, here's one thing that was interesting, guys. They may not get the decision back from AG Paxton before the February 4th deadline, when families can start enrolling.
That gets muddy.
It does, especially if this program sells out, and then you have to go through prioritization.
Well, what does he expect February 4th, though? Does he expect a rush of people to go on to educationfreedom.texas.gov? Is that what it is?
Yes,
we
it
don't
is.
Know.
But does he expect a rush of people?
I will tell you, expect was not the word. They don't know. And he was very transparent about that. He said, there's no way for us to know who's going to show up until we roll it out.
Yeah.
We hope. They do have plans in place once they finish getting all the schools enrolled and parents start enrolling to kind of tailor their marketing, because Mr. Hancock kept referring to the goal is low income and special needs students. And he said, if we look at the enrollments coming in, families applying, and it doesn't match that, they have a plan in place to market it appropriately. And he's been on tour throughout the state. That's
sure.
how we called him today. Talking to the schools, trying to get community meetings with families so people are aware of this. But if there was one question that I wanted to ask today, it's, let's say in a perfect world, the comptroller's office issues 50% of these vouchers and awards them, and half the kids are low income or have some form of a special need. What if the schools don't take them?
Because the school has the right to choose.
And that's what he said.
It's not school choice, it is the school's choice.
Correct. So we need to be really disciplined in our reporting here. All of the best intentions in the world, even if the comptroller's office awards the great majority of these vouchers to students with special needs or students from low-income families, if they can't be put into practice and used, then we need to be really transparent yeah. about how we're going to report that moving forward. But he said today, $30,000 is a heck of an incentive. And a lot of the private schools that the state has been talking to are interested in expanding their special needs programs or building upon them. I did ask how many already have a special education program.
Yeah. How many of those 1,000?
He was not sure. He believes the office is tracking that information. They have a lot of different buckets of that data. So I will follow up, and when we get this story on the air, I'm hoping that we can tell people this is the percentage of schools that already have a program in place.
I think your radar is pointed in exactly the right direction on this, because that we've got to put a huge pin in that and follow this as we go, because again, it's one thing for a bunch of parents to, you know, crowd the site and sign up. It's another thing, you know, did they actually get in? Did the school accept them once they were given the money? Mm-hmm. Last thing that I have for you before we dive into this full interview here is, and I know that you probably didn't ask this of him, because I don't know that he would obviously have an answer on this. A lot of public schools and a lot of public school advocates in this state have been really concerned about this voucher program. They think that this, in many cases, is a way to undermine public education and further erode support for public education here. You dabble around. You talk to so many administrators in different districts covering education. Are they looking at these numbers of private schools that have signed up so far? Do you get a sense from them that they're keeping an eye on this and going, wow, we thought there'd be more demand from those private schools as well to be part of this?
No. The public schools that I've talked to prior to this program rolling out, the number one concern was that not year one, two, three, or four of this program, there would be challenges. I think the overwhelming concern that education advocates and some of the unions had was that, what happens if we get to year five and this program is way more expensive than you thought it was going to be?
Which has happened in some other states.
It has happened in other states, and they've had to have really critical conversations in Arizona, for example, or Florida. I mean, so this program, again, when you are flying the plane and building it at the same time, you don't know how it's going to shake out down the road.
So they're worried about year five, six, seven.
That people are thinking about that, Jason, because
I know that fly has been harassing
me
too.
I wanted to be real country. But the thing that I would caution, but I want people to continue to look at is this. One, right now the money is coming from two different places.
Yeah.
Okay? The money that is awarded to public schools across the state of Texas is not, it's not the same pot of money.
Yeah.
That's number one. But number two, education in the state of Texas is going through a challenging period for a whole number of reasons, separate and aside from this program. I think that's what's creating a lot of anxiety. It's the uncertainty. For the past two, three generations, public education in this state has been stable. You knew how it was funded. It was based on your neighborhood. Yeah. Most people buy in. And for the last 30 years, 95% of all children in Texas are going to their local public schools. 95%. So even with this program rolling out, if 100,000 students sign up, are approved, and are utilizing these funds, you're still going to have over 4.5 million kids in the state that are going to normal, everyday public schools. So it's coming from two different buckets. But when you're looking at decline in the birth rate, fewer people having babies. Here in North Texas, there's a huge exodus from the core of the city because of home prices. So you're starting a family, you want a quality public school, but you also want to get a home. When interest rates were high, I mean, there are a host of factors that are contributing to this, not to mention the inflation.
And we've seen public schools shutting down even in the suburbs and some very popular school districts.
Yes.
And so there is a seismic shift that's going on. I can understand the concerns that some of the public schools and possibly the private schools are having as this program gets underway, because there is that concern about, well, you created this in times when the money was flowing. Keep it coming. Yeah. But we all know that there are those years that happen when the money is not flowing, and what happens in those years.
And for those keeping count too, that was Wheeler's third last thing that he was going to say.
Don't you do him like that.
He always you know, takes the tally on me here.
I've learned very well from my co-host in these past 399
gentlemen
episodes.
Of course you nice.
Have. That is nice.
That is very
that
nice.
That was the nice version.
Episode 400. Hey, a quick shout out and thanks to the Manhattan Project Beer Company, West Dallas, just on the other side of the skyline. Place is fantastic. I'm the only one having something to drink. Well, you are
too. I'm having something to drink.
That's a regular coffee.
That was actually a cappuccino, and they have a full coffee menu here, as well as Prosecco
Great food
for the Diaz of the world.
The coffee was great, too.
Don't like the beer. So, and you're having the usual.
Exactly. This is the only thing I've ever get here, too. So the acting comptroller now, we want to let you hear this interview with Kelly Hancock, acting comptroller, on where things stand for school vouchers. Dia Wall covered it all here. You know, talked about accountability for private schools, which had been a huge question from public school advocates. She asked about what the legislature can do to tweak this in the future, if he's seeing anything. It's a really in-depth interview, and she texted on the way over and said, listen, it was enough. Efficient interview. He answered questions directly. We want to play it for you now.
Let me just say, Acting Comptroller, thank you for taking the time.
Sure.
Let's talk about the ESA program. How many private schools are enrolled statewide? What percentage? And how many more do you expect in the next 20 days when parents can start enrolling?
Yeah, exactly. So we've crossed the 1,000 threshold. So we have, you know, several more. And schools are continuing to enroll. And so we're excited about that and ready for parents to, and students to get involved.
You gave me a little bit of inside baseball before we started. You said there have been some challenges, but those have been addressed. What are some of the challenges?
Well, you're rolling out a new program. And, you know, I think that Governor Abbott recognized I was a business owner. I started a business from literally with nothing. And it's what we're kind of doing here. It is the largest program as well in the nation with over $1 billion that will be available to parents and students. And so anytime you start something up from the ground up, you've got to build a team, and we've got a team that's passionate about providing educational freedom in Texas for the first time. So that's kind of the normal things that you anticipate when you're taking on a venture like we're taking on.
You mentioned you've just crossed over the 1,000 school kind of threshold. What do you say to parents who log on right now and they don't see their school of choice enrolled, or they don't see a school close to them?
Right. Be patient on that. You know, we've had some issues where we're concerned about some conflicts with existing laws and with some of the schools. So we've asked for an attorney general's opinion. But at the same time, we're processing some of those schools that were in that accreditation agency. So schools are continuing to enroll. We're continuing to work with them and get more schools enrolled. And, you know, the truth is, until February 4th, we're not sure which schools are going to be enrolled and which ones aren't. So,
well, Acting Comptroller, you hopped on the road. I was planning to travel down. Let's talk about some of the enrolled schools. Most of the schools that have enrolled in the Texas ESA program are Christian schools. There's been some recent reporting that maybe schools that could potentially have ties to the Chinese government or Islamic organizations are being blocked from the program. Is that the case? Can you just explain what's going on?
So, sure. What's going on is, as the chief financial officer of the state, which is what the comptroller is, we're responsible for taxpayer dollars and to make sure that those taxpayer dollars are used appropriately. And I think we have a huge responsibility on the financial side of it. And so we did discover some schools that had some connections that could be potentially in conflict with directives from the governor or state law. And so rather than risk these dollars and enter into something that might be in conflict, we simply ask for attorney general's opinion. And that's with one main accreditation agency. And we're processing several that were in that group. We've processed, I don't know the number now, but well over 50. Of that we've already processed. So we're continuing to process those and look for alternative ways to kind of get verification that there aren't those conflicts of interest, and then allow them to join as well and be a part of the program.
Acting Comptroller, you know what the headline is going to be, so I'm going to ask you a little directly. Are non-Christian schools being blocked from this program?
Absolutely not. I guarantee if you look at the thousands of schools that are on there already, they're not all going to be Christian schools. But we just want to make sure that we don't have that conflict with other state laws. And I think it's just prudent as the one responsible for the program and your tax dollars to ask for that attorney general opinion before we continue to proceed. Look, this is just the first year. Be patient, work with us, and we'll get everybody processed. Every school that wants to join, that meets the guidelines, we want to make sure that they have the opportunity to join.
I've been looking at the schools that have enrolled. Last check, a little more than half, were pre-K schools. Are pre-K students eligible for these funds? How is this all going to work?
Yeah, they are, and obviously the pre-K schools are very excited about it. It's a new funding opportunity for those pre-K students. And, you know, as we know, when we get younger students involved in education, they do learn faster when they're younger. And so that's not necessarily a bad thing, but we know that the focus, number one, the focus is for low income and special needs, which our office is very, very focused on making sure those low income families are aware of the program. We have a marketing effort. I've been traveling the state in those areas, going to schools in those areas. And so we want to, K through 12, primarily, low income and special needs. Those are the priority of the legislature when I voted on the legislation and of our office. And so that's why we appreciate you coming out so that we can make sure that those individuals are aware of the program.
When it comes to those students who do have special needs or who come from low income families, let's say in a dream world, your office awards 50% of these ESAs or vouchers to those families. What happens if the schools don't take them?
Well, it is up to the schools. Look, this is not a big government program. This is educational freedom. So we're not forcing schools to enroll. We're not forcing parents in any way to enroll or participate. We are giving a lot of flexibility there. So they do have to work with their local schools. And the good news is, as I've traveled the state, look, $10,000 in a lot of these low-income areas, that'll fully fund the schools. And the other thing it's doing, a lot of schools out there now are saying, you know, where they have scholarships, they have other financial incentives for those students, this will spread that out as well and allow some other families. So it is educational freedom, freedom from the schools and freedom for the families.
Is your office doing anything to encourage schools to enroll and accept the most vulnerable?
Absolutely. And especially what we're seeing, especially with the special needs, because we're funding special needs at the same level that we fund in public education, where I served for 13 years, we're seeing a lot of these private schools really look at growing their special needs program, which is really nice. And I think going to be very, very beneficial. So we are, in fact, as soon as I took over, you know, we didn't sign up our partner to a little bit later. We had to go through that government process that you have to go through. But I began personally, as soon as I took the office in July, began traveling and making sure that we were promoting it. We were literally a listening tour. It wasn't a speaking tour. We wanted to hear from those schools. We wanted to hear from families in those low-income areas. And we've gotten great feedback.
When it comes to students with special needs, I know that dollar amount has gone up significantly. Can you just give us the numbers so I can make sure we're accurate, sir?
Yeah, so special needs, you're talking $30,000, which is an incentive for a lot of private schools to maybe offer new programs they haven't offered before. Now, they do need that report. They, you know, we have to trust and verify. They have to provide the paperwork that they can get from their public schools on that they meet the criteria. And so, yes, it's a huge incentive and a great opportunity for those families that a lot of them have never had before.
Of those 1,000 schools, how many already have special education programs?
You know, that number I'm not really sure of. We haven't broken that down. I'm sure our office does, and we can provide that information.
Okay, when it comes to the regions, which region has the most private schools enrolled? Is it Dallas? Is it Houston? Is it San Antonio? Is it Austin?
Yeah, it's going to follow population. And so, you know, obviously Houston has the largest populated area, and we're going to see a large population there. I was in the San Antonio region, for example, and, you know, they have a number of schools already available there. But I would say every region is represented, and it kind of matches the population in each region.
Dallas is bigger than Houston. We need to make sure we get that together now. No, I'm just joking.
Well, which was my first place to go. I went to King's Academy in Dallas, and you know, they're doing a great job there and really, really excited about the program. So,
you know, Dallas and Houston are a little competitive. I just had to get that on the record. You know, most private schools, they finalize admissions before these voucher decisions or ESA decisions are awarded. You think that timeline needs to be pushed back so families and the schools can be a little better informed heading into the next year?
Yeah, that's some of the information that as we kind of conducted our listening tours across the state. It is. And you know, we would like to have provided this sooner. The reality is the legislative session had to end and we had to start. And so this will be the first year that it is a little bit later than a lot of the private schools would like. And I understand that. We heard from them. But the key for us is making sure we get this right. We want to make sure that the portal, the software works appropriately, that we have to get it right. And We want to hurry, we don't want to rush. And there is a difference there. And so that's why it is a little bit later this year, just because it is our first year. But again, that will change in coming years.
Parents start enrolling in about 20 days. Yeah. What information do they need? How will the portal work? What paperwork do they need to have?
Yeah, so there is a great site that we've put together, and it's not a typical government site. It's a business type site called educationfreedom.texas.gov. And so that's educationfreedom.texas.gov. And on that site, we list a lot of the information there. And then we have a question area, so an FAQ on there. And so all that information's there. And frankly, if you don't see it on that website, feel free to call our office. I mean, we are very customer friendly. We take a business approach. It's my background to a government agency.
You are the person in charge of rolling this entire program out. Just go ahead and tell me, what tweaks do you think the legislature could make to improve this program in years 2, 3, 4, and beyond?
Well, hopefully the biggest tweak is that they'll fund at a greater level in next session. And so we're going through there. Obviously, in the past legislation, this is the first one. But the good news is we weren't the first state to do this. And so they did learn a lot from other states and were able to really get a good piece of legislation that we're able to work within. And I think we're going to have a great product come February 4th when families get to register.
So roughly 500 K-12 schools. What was the target number of enrollees in this program in year one?
Well, obviously we would like to sell out. And that can vary based on the numbers. As we talked about, the funding for special needs is almost three times higher than the average student that we're talking about. And so what we don't know, and it's really hard even looking at other states, to know the numbers of, all right, how many special needs students are you going to have? How many K-12? How many preschool? How many homeschool? And so because we have those different criteria, we really won't know how those funds are going to be parsed out until we see registration. What we are doing, working with our partners, is we are tracking those low income and those special needs as folks register so that we can adjust our marketing. What we want to do is make sure that the intent of the legislature is low income and special needs. And so as they register, as these families register, we're going to be tracking that and making sure that we get the message out to the areas that are the focus for this legislation.
Now, let's say the program does sell out. Let's say you have demand that far exceeds the number of available spots based on the funding. How is your office going to prioritize who gets in and who does not?
Well, the legislature kind of did that. And so they prioritized it by, as we've said, special needs and low income. And then there are income brackets. So everyone that registers will go into essentially a bucket. And then there's a funnel based on prioritization that's in the statute itself. The legislature directs us on how to address that, and then it's our job to apply that in order for prioritization. And then if they're not included, they do stay on that registry so that they're there and ready, and it'll have to be updated for the next school year.
Overall, how would you rate how enrollment is going on the school side?
We're very, very pleased. And so input, frankly, we've seen some schools that have come to meetings or have called us and asked questions that we're like, we hope they register, and then sure enough, here they are. And then I think what'll happen as well as we continue to move along is you'll see schools see other schools, their peers, and go, oh, they're registering, we better register. And again, this is the first year, largest in the nation, and the fact that we already have 1,000 schools, that's 1,000 schools more than we had last year, than we've ever had, as a matter of fact.
When it comes to the accountability piece, I completely understand that from the legislature's perspective, the governor's perspective, this was about educational freedom. But once y'all write these checks to the private schools and they get this funding, is there any accountability metrics on curriculum or student achievement, student safety?
So the accountability, like most markets, is the family. Look, if the student's not getting education for the first time ever, that the parent or the student thinks they should be receiving, they leave and the money leaves. That's never happened before. You've never had that freedom to just go find something else. And so I think the best accountability you can have is the ability to shop, to go find another place to get educated. And so, yes, I think there's strong accountability there, and that's the marketplace, and it's what we see every day. I mean, look at restaurants. You know, restaurants, it's hard to make it 7 years. In fact, one out of seven fail. And, you know, I think we'll see that in strong accountability. Best accountability is a family.
When it comes to disbursements, how are those going to be released? Because let's say, to your point, I send my kid to a school, I've got my ESA, we're excited, it doesn't work, and we move them mid-year. What's right. the disbursement plan, and how is that going to work when it comes to maybe they leave and go back to a public school?
Right, and so there are increments there, and so there is that payout and the accountability to make sure that the child actually shows up. So, you know, once you register and once you're accepted, then they're your funds, but they stay in the state treasury until the school year and we start implementing in those. And so those payouts will go, and if there are changes, we make adjustments on the funding as well. And so, yes, we're perfectly aware that a student may start with a school, but they may not finish. Mm-hmm. And so we have a system set in place to make sure that the funds stay with the child. And then if the child chooses to do something else, then the state's not continuing to funding that. You know, the good news is we got to look at other states and mm-hmm. see some things that cause problems and made sure we had a system in place that was accountability, transparent, and it's really what our office does each and every day. Make sure we're focused on transparency and accountability.
I was looking at the list. A lot of the exclusive schools in Dallas are not showing up just yet. What are you doing to convince? I mean, a lot of these private schools that people have dreamed of going to where maybe the money has been a barrier for them. Do you have any concern that maybe some of the more exclusive schools won't enroll?
So I think what we're aware of is that a lot of these schools, there are a lot of private schools that have waiting lists already. And so what we hope to do is help out with that waiting list and then let the market itself work. And even if you're exclusive, when your waiting list is gone, it changes things for you. And it changes for those families that are there. And so more opportunity means changes within the entire education environment. And those that have been waiting 2-3 years to get into one of those schools, guess what? We're going to provide other opportunities at a lower cost once you apply and get accepted.
Just a couple of more. What if the program doesn't sell out? What happens to the remainder of those?
So those funds will stay in the treasury. They'll stay with the state on that. But our goal, our objective is to make sure we sell out.
What do you want parents at home to know about this program? Because we get a lot of questions. Folks are really interested to know kind of the inside baseball of it all, how it's going to work, how it's going to roll out. What would you want families who are interested in this program to know?
I think the key is this program's for you. I mean, you know, this is set up to make Texas the number one education state in the nation, to bring about competition, to force improvements across the board, public schools, private school, charter schools. And competition kind of does that. You have to improve if you want to stick around. And so this is for the families. This is literally for the children. I mean, it's for the kids. I first ran for school board when we had our first child. And I've been passionate about education. And I've been passionate about education freedom, though my kids graduated from public schools, and I love public schools. But we got to improve education in Texas, across the board in all areas. And our goal, our hope, is that this does that.
Acting Comptroller, anything else you think is important that you would not want us to miss in our reporting?
I would, you know, if you can put the educationfreedom.texas.gov, because it is a very good site. It's more of a business, mm-hmm. you know, profile on it.
No, absolutely.
We got a lot of information there.
So. Okay. Well, I appreciate the time.